It's the Kim Munson Show, analyzing the most important stories.
Socialization of transportation, education, energy, housing, and water. What it means is that government controls it through rules and regulations.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
Under this guise of bipartisanship and nonpartisanship, it's actually tapped down the truth.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
On an equal field in the battle of ideas, mistruths or misconceptions, and it is getting us into a world of hurt.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
Indeed, and welcome to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Thank you so much for joining us, each and every one of you. You're each treasured, valued, you have purpose. Today, strive for excellence. Take care of your heart, your soul, your mind, and your body. Live with intention. You were made for this moment. And I get to work with a great team here, and that is producer Steve, Zach, Patty, Keith, Charlie, Jen, all the people here at Crawford Broadcasting. And I guess we're to the point where I can say Happy New Year, producer Steve, because it's right around the corner.
Like it or not, it's here. Yes.
My dad used to say, time waits on no one. And every day we had all these little snippets of wisdom from my father, and he's absolutely right. In fact, I was talking to him just recently, and I said, remember when you said that? I said, I can really feel it. And it is amazing how fast time goes, producer Steve.
Well, you can get down in the pits of every, and let me rephrase that. You can get into everyday living and get so engrossed in it. You sometimes lose track or sense of time. And I run into people that in all kinds of circles that I hang out in, and I'll mention something. Well, you know, it's been 20 years since XYZ. And they said, oh, that can't possibly be.
I know.
And then you walk them through it, and they got that look in their face like, oh, my gosh.
Yeah. It was yesterday, and it was an eternity ago. It's just crazy. Time's a crazy thing. But that's why each day live with intention. And it's really important. You have purpose here. You were made for this moment. I am convinced of it. Recommend that you check out the website, KimMunson.com. And we have all of our podcasts and our recaps of our shows there. Just click on the picture, and then that should bring up the podcast and our recap on that we work so hard on. Sign up for our weekly email newsletter. It goes out on Sundays, and you'll get first look at all of our upcoming guests, our most recent Sounding Off with Kim Munson podcasts, and our most recent op-ed. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com. And as you know, we are an independent voice. We search for truth and clarity by looking at these issues through the lens of freedom versus force, force versus freedom. So as an independent voice, I so appreciate all of our advertising partners, all of you who support us. Thank you, thank you, thank you. I greatly appreciate all of that. Be sure and check out America's Veteran Stories this Sunday, 3 to 4 p.m. on KLZ 560. Did another interview with a friend of mine from Belgium, Martin King, and he's written another book. He's an expert on World War II battlefields. He actually has taken many World War II veterans, and both American and German, to the battlefields that they fought on. And so this is a labor of love. He's written an extensive amount of books on World War II, but he's has a new one out, Triage, A History of America's Frontline Medics from Concord to COVID-19. So absolutely, I'm sure it's a fascinating book. So be sure and check that out on Sunday, because again, another great interview where you can learn a lot. And these shows come to you because of my great partners. And one of those is Hooters Restaurants. They have five locations, Lone Tree, Westminster, Aurora, Colorado Springs, and Loveland. And they have happy hour specials. So if you dine in, they have some specials. They have to go. And then also just would really recommend that you check them out. Some pretty fun specials. And I tell you, Steve, we had taken it for granted up until the time we had the whole COVID-19 Wuhan, China virus reaction disruption that shut things down. We had taken it just for granted, the freedom to be able to get together with friends and family. And what a treasure that is. And I don't take that for granted anymore, producer Steve.
No, I never had, but I think I got that from my mother, because she was always one to, you know, play the role of hostess and gather people together. And maybe that's why I have such a great appreciation for today, and also notice it in those who don't.
Mm-hmm. Well, and if you don't want to be the gatherer to get everybody together, because it is a lot of work, Steve, you probably saw your mother do that, to get people together. Certainly, go over to Hoosier's Restaurants. They have lunch specials and happy hour specials, so be sure and check that out. The show that we are broadcasting today for December 29th with Dr. Alan Gelzo, I'm sure is going to be fabulous. He's has a new book out about Robert E. Lee. It's Robert E. Lee, A Life. And really excited to have that conversation with him. And I went to tried to find some Robert E. Lee quotes. And I found this one. And Robert E. Lee was born in 1807. He died in 1870. He was a U.S. Army officer from 1829 to 1861. A Confederate general, 1861 to 1865, and a college president, 1865 to 1870. And obviously, he was a central figure in the American Civil War. And as I was searching for quotes, it's so interesting. And in this day and age, I'm always a little cynical, maybe that is. So I put in Robert E. Lee quotes, and typically Wikipedia comes up on the right side of the page immediately with a history, and it was blank. Now, I did do a web search for Wikipedia and Robert E. Lee, and I did find the history there, but I thought it was curious. It may just be just a coincidence, but you know, the fact that Robert E. Lee, instead of looking at him, the whole person, he's just demonized without looking at our history. I just found that kind of interesting. But maybe I'm just getting cynical in my old age here.
Well,
did I just say that to you?
Well, yeah, you're talking to the king of cynicism or cynical. But you haven't, you know, get to the quote here, and maybe that'll make, you know, help people see where you're going here.
Okay. Robert E. Lee said this: a nation which does not remember what it was yesterday does not know where it is today. Is that not powerful?
This snagged my attention right away because it speaks to today. It is us today, but for different reasons. I mean, I know why people don't remember or have an idea of what we are all about, you know, for educational systems being what they are, or indifference. But for this guy to say this 140 years ago or so, I really would love to know more what he was thinking.
Well, and particularly after going through the very bloody American Civil War, and he was the Confederate general. And so this whole time that we've gone through the last couple of years with tearing down statues, tearing down history, instead of having a conversation about the good, the bad, and the ugly, that is really what I think a healthy society does, is have those conversations instead of, like, looking at the founders and only focusing on their faults, instead of also realizing as human beings they had this amazing ideal, which was very radical. It's radical throughout the history of mankind, that a people would actually, we the people, would govern ourselves. And we need to have honest conversations about that. And that's why the curriculum is so important regarding what we're teaching our kids. And that's a whole nother conversation. But producer Steve, I am so excited about our next guest, which is Dr. Alan Gelzo, regarding this new book that he has out, and it is Robert E. Lee, A Life. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with Dr. Alan Gelzo.
Home ownership and private property rights help you build wealth for you and your family. RE/MAX Alliance award-winning realtor Karen Levine understands this. Supply is super tight right now. This is why you need a seasoned professional with excellent negotiating skills on your side of the table, whether buying or selling an existing home or buying a new build. As a member of the National Association of Realtors Board of Directors, Karen Levine volunteers hours of her time to help you build your American dream. Call her today at 303-877-7516. Again, that's 303-877-7516.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim Munson, MUNSON.com.
And welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. Be sure and check out our website. That is Kim Munson, MUNSON.com. sign up for our weekly newsletter there, and you can email me at kim@kimmons.com as well. And I so appreciate each and every one of you who support us. We search for truth and clarity by looking at these issues through the lens of freedom versus force, force versus freedom. If something's a good idea, you should not have to force people to do it. Socialism ultimately comes down to force. It's not about free stuff. That's just the carrot to get people to vote for it. This week, this Christmas week, and as we're coming into the new year, we're doing some very special shows. And for our December 29th broadcast, we have on the line with us Dr. Alan Gelzo. And he is the Senior Research Scholar for the Council of the Humanities, the Director of the Initiative on Politics and Statesmanship with the James Madison Program in American Ideals and Institutions at Princeton University. And he has written a new book, very important book, about Robert E. Lee. It's Robert E. Lee, A Life. Dr. Gelzo, welcome to the show.
It's very good, once again, to be back speaking to you, Kim, and being able to speak to your audience as well.
Well, I'm excited about this. With all of the narratives out there in 2021 America, 2020 and 2021, tearing down statues, only focusing on our founders' faults, not talking about taking the whole person, I'm thrilled to learn more about Robert E. Lee. He was a complex individual, correct?
Oh, very complicated indeed. Very complicated.
So where should we start? Well, and one thing I wanted, I've also been doing some programs throughout the year with a friend of mine, Ben Martin. He's a patriotic historian, former Army Ranger, and a graduate of West Point. And we've done a series throughout the year on the American Revolutionary War. And he mentioned, I think it was Henry Lighthorse Lee, I think it was, and he said that he was like the great-great-grandfather of Robert E. Lee. And I don't really know that much about each of them, but I thought that connection was interesting.
Well, the connection's even more direct than that. Lighthorse Harry Lee was actually Robert E. Lee's father.
Oh, his father. Okay.
So Robert E. Lee had, you might say, a direct connection not only to the Civil War, but through his father to the American Revolution as well.
Wow.
That was not, I have to rush in to say, though, that was not always the happiest of relationships. Sometimes we'd like to think that a famous father and a famous son are just kind of handing the baton off to each other. And that was not what happened in the life of either Lighthorse Harry or his son, Robert. Robert is, as you said, he is a complicated person to analyze and to get to know. And although he has the image and the trappings in American memory of being probably the most famous Confederate general of the Civil War, maybe right alongside Ulysses S. Grant, the most famous military figure of the American Civil War, yet he was a very difficult person to get to know. You know, before the war, I'm going here to a diary that was kept by Mary Chestnut, who was the wife of a senator from South Carolina. And her diary, by the way, is one of the gems of the Civil War era. She was a wonderful observer of people, places, and things, and her diary just teems with marvelous occasions and vignettes and insights. She met Robert E. Lee before the war at the White Sulphur Springs in western Virginia. Because Lee brought his wife there, his wife, Mary, was plagued by rheumatoid arthritis, and they came to the White Sulphur Springs to benefit from bathing in the hot springs there. Well, Mary Chestnut met him there, and she remembered that a man riding a beautiful horse joined us. And he was wearing a hat, which had, she thought, something of a military look to it, so she assumed he's military. She said that he sat his horse so gracefully, he was so distinguished at all points, that she said afterwards, I was sorry I didn't get his name. Who was he? And she found out that this was Robert E. Lee. And she marveled that everything about him looked so fine-looking. And the word that came to her mind was perfection. No fault to be found if you hunted for one in this man, Lee. But here's the funny thing. Chestnut wasn't really enchanted with him. Certainly not, at least as she was with many others. She knew Lee's older brother, Sidney Smith Lee, and she said, I like Smith Lee better. Why? Well, he's no mystery. Smith Lee is so easy to get along with. He mixes with everybody. And then Chestnut wrote in her diary, can anybody say that they know his brother, meaning Robert? And she said, I doubt it. He looks so cold and quiet and grand.
Huh.
And people over and over again had that same reaction to Robert E. Lee, that he was almost unapproachable. And there's a reason for that, and this is why I connect it to Light Horse Harry, because perfection was one of Robert E. Lee's abiding goals in life. That's not because he was supernaturally blessed with ability to do everything perfectly. It's because he demanded so much from himself and from others. And why? Because his father, Light Horse Harry, was such a colossal failure. Light Horse Harry achieved a great career and a great reputation during the Revolution as a cavalry commander.
Mm-hmm.
And he became part of that circle of young men whom George Washington reckoned almost as his second sons, or kind of a family of adopted sons. But once the war was over, Light Horse Harry embarked on a series of get-rich-quick schemes, all of which failed horribly. He wound up in debtor's prison. He wound up bankrupt. He had to give up the family estate, Stratford Hall, on the northern neck of Virginia, and move into Alexandria. And then, not only did he suffer one financial reverse after another, and by the way, I have to say the financial reverses were the kinds of things where we scratch our heads and say, what on earth was he thinking? It was like investing in ski resorts in the Sahara. Then he politically creates one mistake for himself after another, gets beaten up by a mob, a political mob in Baltimore. And after that...
Like literally beaten up?
Literally beaten up, just about within an inch of his life. One other person who was attacked by the mob was actually killed. He leaves the family. He pulls up stakes, heads for the West Indies. Robert is just 6 or 7 years old. And his father leaves for the West Indies. Robert never sees him again.
Oh, my gosh.
Light Horse Harry made one attempt to come back to the United States. But he was, by that point, mortally ill with cancer. He makes landfall in Georgia and in 2 weeks dies there. So Robert, once his father takes off, Robert never sees him again. And that, I believe, creates a vacuum in Robert's life, that he feels that he has inherited the family obligation to make right all the things that his father did wrong. And I think that is what lies at the bottom of Lee's pursuit of perfection. He is going to show that he is not Light Horse Harry.
Wow.
That is, now that makes for a difficult, I mean, you can't keep the snakes in the basket for very long that way.
Mm-hmm.
But it becomes a major driver of his life. And you see it not only in moments such as Mary Chestnut saw, but you also see it in his conduct as commander of the Army of Northern Virginia during the Civil War. He's extremely demanding of his staff, of his officers. And then in the post-war years, when he becomes the president of Washington College, he's just as demanding there. And in fact, I have to say that in those years as president of Washington College, he actually has a freer hand at demanding perfection. And the proof is in the fact that as president of Washington College, he abolishes all the rule books for student behavior. Students who matriculate at Washington College, they come, they have an interview with the president, with General Lee. You can imagine that was a pretty intimidating moment.
Mm-hmm.
And he tells them, we have no rules here. The only rule that we have is that every student shall behave himself as a gentleman. Now, you look at that and think, oh, isn't that such a relaxed way of doing things? Isn't that such a genteel and humane way of conducting matters, especially disciplinary matters? Until it dawns on you that having made off with the rules, so to speak, that means that Robert E. Lee himself is the rule book. He is the judge, jury, and executioner about student conduct. That's perfection for you.
Well, now, quick question, Dr. Gelzo. How many children in the family? You mentioned Sydney, Robert. Any other children in the family?
Yes. Bear in mind that Lighthorse Harry married twice. He married first his cousin, Matilda, and there were two children, a son and a daughter, who were the offspring of that. So there is a senior Lee, a Henry IV. And I have to say, parenthetically, Henry IV reproduces all of the bad traits of his father. And I won't go into the weeds about it, but he is just as reckless, just as miserable. They finally call him Black Horse Harry. Huh. And in the end, he too has to leave the United States. He expatriates to France and dies there in the 1830s. Robert E. Lee is the product of Lighthorse Harry Lee's second marriage to Ann Hill Carter. So he's marrying, Lighthorse Harry is marrying a Virginia Carter. That's really something to reckon with. But the results of that are no happier than his first marriage to Matilda. From that marriage, there are two other brothers for Robert, and that is Carter and Charles Carter Lee and Sidney Smith Lee. And then there are a number of sisters. There is Anne Marshall. Well, that's her married name. Then there are also, there's also one other sister, and she too marries and expatriates to France. So there's a sense in which the Lee children, either they take this turn like Robert to perfectionism, or else they find some way of going someplace else and starting over as somebody else. So whether you've got the sisters or whether you've got the brothers, it's very strange. His oldest brother, Charles Carter Lee, was another Lee who was enamored of these get-rich real estate speculation schemes in Western Virginia. And Charles Carter Lee in the 1830s actually tries to get Robert to join him out in Western Virginia in real estate development. And Robert at first is willing to listen to this, but the more Robert listens to it, the more it begins to remind him of his father, and eventually he kind of pulls back, and nothing ever really comes of Charles Carter Lee's investments. What Charles Carter Lee eventually does is he marries a rich widow and sets himself up as a gentleman farmer in Northern Virginia. Sidney Smith Lee goes into the Navy. He has an interesting career in the Navy. Joins the Confederacy. After the end of the Confederacy, he really does little more than sit and twiddle his thumbs. The other Lees really are not what we would call distinguished people. It's Robert who believes that he is the one who has to carry the flag for redeeming the Lee reputation. That's really what he spends most of his life doing.
Well, you know, and that's a burden. That's quite a burden. So, Dr. Gelzo, we're going to go to break. And this show comes to you because I have many great partners. And in studio with me is Lauren Levy. He is a great sponsor of both of the shows, both the Kim Munson Show and America's Veteran Stories. And Lauren Levy, here we are. I can't believe it. We're at the end of 2021. 2022 is on the horizon. This is our December 29th broadcast. What do you want to say to our listeners on this day?
Well, first I want to wish everyone a happy and healthy new year going forward, but in reflection, 2021 was an interesting year in our business. It was a great year. We got to help a lot of people save a lot of money, and it's very fulfilling when you can have a job that helps people, especially with all the inflation we've been dealing with, helps people reset their lives, save money, get ahead, or pay off their home faster. It's just been a good year.
That's great. And you said 2021 has been an interesting year, and it's like I want to put that in bold letters. It really has. 2022, I'm excited for it. I know that there's going to be challenges, there's going to be opportunities, but we will be here on a regular basis searching for truth and clarity and looking at these issues through this lens of freedom versus force, force versus freedom. And there still is opportunity out there. and looking into 2022, how can people reach you? You're in the mortgage business. You work with a lot of different companies, so you can really help people. You've got choices, and that's what I love about your business.
That's right. As a broker, we can go to a lot of different places to find the right loan for people, and the best way to reach out is just always call 303-880-8881. It's a free call. It's a free consultation. There's no charges to do anything unless we can find a way to help you. And in that case, you know, typically the banks pay the fees anyhow. So there's just not a lot of risk to do it. And all that's going to happen in the worst case is you're going to end up in a better situation than you are today. And that's not such a bad thing.
That's not such a bad thing. So, Lauren Levy, I so appreciate you. I wish you and your family a very happy, healthy, prosperous, joyful 2022, and we'll get back to work.
Thank you. Same to you and yours.
And we'll be right back with Dr. Alan Gelzo.
Life is more than what we have in the bank. Mary Alpers and Steve Cruz with Three Points Financial understand that comprehensive financial planning is an important component for each individual to thrive and prosper. Three Points Financial provides tax, investment, and retirement planning so that you can achieve your financial independence. With so much public policy uncertainty, it is important to have the professionals at Three Points Financial working for you to navigate those uncharted waters. Check out ThreePointsFinancial.com to schedule your initial consultation to achieve your financial freedom. That's ThreePointsFinancial.com.
Would you have ever dreamed that freedom of speech, freedom of thought, freedom of assembly, and freedom of religion would be under assault and attack in America? Unbelievably, it is happening right before our eyes. That is why it is important to keep free-thinking, independent voices on the airwaves, the internet, and social media. Kim Munson is one of those important voices. Help her keep independence alive. Go to KimMunson.com to contribute, to join Kim in the battle of ideas raging in America today. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com.
And welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. Check out our website. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. And thank you to all of you who support us. Before we get back to Dr. Alan Gelzo, and we're talking about his most recent book, Robert E. Lee, A Life, want to acknowledge another great partner of both of my shows, that is the Kim Munson Show and America's Veteran Stories. And that is Kirsch Insurance Group. They're experts in the Medicare arena. And I think it's kind of goofy the way the government has all these different rules when you can do things and cannot. But Kirsch Insurance Group can help you navigate through all of that. They are a broker with a variety of different companies, so they can really help you set yourself up for success. So be sure and check that their website out. That is ikirsch.com. That's ikirsch.com. And they can certainly set you up for success. We're talking about Robert E. Lee with Dr. Alan Gelzo, and he's with Princeton University, and it's a long title, but one of the things is Director on the Initiative of Politics and Statesmanship, the James Madison Program in American Ideals and Institutions. It does my heart good to know that at a university such as Princeton, that you are there and you are talking about these important issues, Dr. Gelzo.
Well, it's a marvelous place to do it because, of course, Princeton has connections to the Lees. Lighthorse Harry Lee was a Princeton grad, and his time there at Princeton overlapped with James Madison and a number of famous Americans from the Revolutionary era. In fact, Lighthorse Harry, for all of the way his reputation went up in smoke in the later years of his life, actually was a very successful student, won a number of honors, and people were very impressed with him, especially as an orator. Lighthorse Harry, if he had a gift for anything, it was the way he could turn and spin words. And, of course, the most famous quote that's attributed to Lighthorse Harry is the one that he delivers as a eulogy after the death of George Washington in 1799. Because speaking in Philadelphia at a special memorial for President Washington, Lighthorse Harry Lee is the one who describes Washington as first in war, first in peace, and first in the hearts of his countrymen. So we don't often connect Lighthorse Harry with those words. The words almost stand on their own.
Uh-huh.
But that was Lighthorse Harry, and of course Lighthorse Harry is the father of Robert E. Lee. Although Robert, it has to be said, does not inherit the gene for eloquence. Robert is an engineer. And when he goes to West Point to begin his education there, he's really embarking on a career that for almost 30 years is going to have him working as a civil engineer, but in uniform. And that's largely because the West Point that Robert E. Lee enters in 1825 really is the engineering school of the country. There are no other independent engineering schools. And when you went to West Point, what you really got was a career and training in engineering, in building things. Now, you might think, well, wait a minute, isn't West Point a military academy? Aren't you going to be trained there to be a soldier and a great commander and how to move armies on battlefields? And the answer to that is no. The whole image of the American Republic in the first part of the 19th century was that republics don't go off like empires and monarchies on great careers of conquest. So therefore, you don't train your soldiers, you don't train your officers at a military academy to be Napoleons or Wellingtons, because that's just not what republics do. That's what monarchies do. What you do is you concentrate on training them for defensive warfare, defending the republic, not trying to expand it, defending it. And that means you build fortifications. To build fortifications, you need an education in engineering.
Okay.
And that is primarily what the West Point curriculum was about. If you looked at Robert E. Lee's list of classes, what would surprise you the most is there's maybe only one or two moments in his 4 years at West Point when he's actually studying anything that you could call strategy and tactics. The rest of it is mathematics. The rest of it is engineering. The rest of it is how to build things. He graduates second in his class, and that's right up there at the top, quite sufficiently at the top for him to be commissioned into the Corps of Engineers in 1829. And from 1829 till 1855, that's really, for the most part, that's what he does. He builds things. His first posting is to Georgia, where he is assisting at the foundations of today of what we now call Fort Pulaski. Then he is assigned westward to St. Louis, where he spends 4 years reconstructing the waterfront of St. Louis, because the Mississippi River was doing all kinds of strange things, as it continues to do to this very day. Mm-hmm. The strange thing that it was doing at that point was the current of the Mississippi was swerving to the eastward, threatening to turn St. Louis into an inland town. So Lee's task is to divert the course of the Mississippi River and to ensure that St. Louis remains a river town. He spends 4 years doing that, and it's quite a complicated task. It's what we call coastal engineering, and that's a subspecies of civil engineering, but it's very demanding. And he spends those years in St. Louis doing exactly that. From there, he goes to Fort Hamilton, which is guarding the Narrows, the entryway into New York Harbor. And there he's the principal engineering officer at Fort Hamilton. He spends 6 years there building and rebuilding the fortifications at Fort Hamilton. So here's someone who's spending year after year after year as an engineer. The one break in that occurs during the Mexican War. He's assigned as an engineer to the staff of General John Wool. He's then transferred to the staff of General Winfield Scott. Scott is planning one of the most dramatic campaigns in the American 19th century. It's the campaign that lands at Veracruz and marches all the way up to Mexico City. Lee starts out as an engineering officer on Scott's staff, but Scott figures out very quickly Lee has talents beyond just engineering. And as that campaign unfolds, Scott increasingly relies on Lee as a reconnaissance officer, as a communicator, as an advisor, as an all-around man Friday. And, in fact, years later, Winfield Scott will talk about the victories he wins on that campaign as being largely due to the energy and work of Robert E. Lee. But once the Mexican War is over, Lee goes back to engineering. His assignment is build Fort Carroll in Baltimore Harbor. And from there, he's assigned to become superintendent of West Point from 1852 to 1855. And at that point, he's so frustrated because promotion in the Corps of Engineers is so agonizingly slow that, technically speaking, he is still only a captain. I mean, he's been 25 years in the Army. Mm-hmm. That's all he's gotten. So he accepts a transfer from the Engineers to the 2nd Cavalry in Texas, and he becomes lieutenant colonel of the 2nd Cavalry. And he's in that capacity when the secession begins and the secession crisis blows up in the winter of 1860 to 61. But you have to see that for most of his career, he is an engineering officer. And the only time he ever actually commands soldiers under fire is when he's handed the job in October of 1859 of suppressing John Brown's raid at Harper's Ferry. And that puts him in command of 2 companies of Marines. He's not a field general. No one would have looked at his record and said, here is someone who is going to become the great General Lee, simply because so much of his career up to that point has been devoted to engineering and to other small-scale tasks. But the Civil War changes all of that. It changes it not only because it's going to make him into the famous general, but it's also going to make him into the man who commits treason. And Kim, I don't use that word lightly, but he is a man that when I look at him and I look at the decisions he makes, I have no other word, given the Constitution, no other word to characterize the decision he makes but as treason.
Dr. Gelzo, how do you think, after studying him, how did he match that up in his mind?
Because the decision that he makes in 1861 is not a decision. It's not a single moment. When I set out to work on that particular problem, I worked on the assumption that many other biographers have had, and that is Lee's decision to go for the Confederacy was a simple, straightforward decision. The most famous biographer of Lee, Douglas Southall Freeman, in the 1930s, described Lee's decision as the decision he was born to make. And it was just a simple decision. Lee looked at the situation, knew what he had to do, and made the decision. And the more I looked into the contrary accounts of what happened in April of 1861 with Robert E. Lee, the more I had impressed on me that this was not a single decision. This was an incremental series of decisions in which Lee takes one step, takes another, finds himself finally swept up and looped into a situation he had never anticipated only a few weeks before. Basically, it works like this. At the apex of the secession crisis, when 7 southern states have seceded from the Union, General Scott, who was at that point General-in-Chief of the United States Army, recalls Lee from his post at Texas. And as the situation begins to heighten in tension, and you have the bombardment of Fort Sumter in mid-April of 1861, Scott, who is well stricken in years, knows he can't take the field as an active commander, wants Robert E. Lee to take charge of whatever federal troops are going to be used to suppress this rebellion. President Lincoln goes along with this, and President Lincoln delegates an old Washington hand, Francis Preston Blair, to make the offer to Lee. Lee sits down with Blair in the Blair family townhouse right across the street from the White House. It's what we call Blair House today,
oh, okay.
By the way. And Blair makes the offer. Lee refuses. Lee says, I cannot draw my sword against my native state. And from there, he goes to see Scott, has a very difficult interview with Scott, in which he says to Scott, I can't raise my hand against my children. I can't raise my hand against my family. He resigns his commission as, by that point, colonel of the 1st United States Cavalry. And that's that's two decisions right there. First of all, to decline that command. Secondly, to resign from the Army. Now, at that point, he might have just sat tight and said, all right, I'm going to sit this out as a neutral. There were other people who did that. But then come commissioners from Richmond. Now, Virginia is in the process of seceding from the Union. These commissioners from Richmond say, we would like you to come and advise us on military preparations. Lee yields to that, goes to Richmond. When he gets to Richmond, he finds that he's being presented, and here comes yet another decision, with a commission as a brigadier general of Virginia forces. And he accepts that. 6 weeks later, a month, 6 weeks later, he is commissioned into the Confederate States Army as a general. What you see is not someone who set out on a particular plan, but someone who started taking one step, and then that one step led to another, and then another, and then another. And then by the end of it, by the middle of May 1861, he is now fully enmeshed as an officer of the Confederate States of America. And it's too late to turn back. Although there is a moment when he did say in a letter to his wife, maybe this is the time for me to resign. Why did he do that? Well, partly he cites, I can't raise my hand against my native state. I always found that to be slightly strange.
That is...
It's strange because actually Lee does not live most of his life in his native state. I mean, he lives in all these other places I've described. Mm-hmm. He actually lived longer in New York. When you add up all the years, he lived longer in New York than he actually lived in Virginia.
And he raises his hand against New York. That is so fascinating, Dr. Gelzo.
It is.
Let's go to break and continue. I've got to ruminate on that as we go through break on that. That is really fascinating. This is much more complicated than I ever imagined. What a fascinating book, Robert E. Lee Alive. I'm talking with Dr. Alan Gelzo, who is the author. We're going to go to break. Before we do that, though, I want to give a shout out to Castlegate Knife and Tool, a great family-owned business right here in Sedalia, Colorado. And they do have a pop-up store in the Castle Rock Mercantile as well. So whether or not you are shopping for a chef, a wedding gift, a sportsman, a collector, Castlegate Knife and Tool is the place for you. And they have a great website that is castlegate.com, castlegate.com. We'll be right back with Dr. Alan Gelzo.
With the federal government printing money, it looks like inflation is on the horizon. That is why you should lock in a low rate now on your mortgage. Lauren Levy with Polygon Financial Group is here to help. Lauren works with a variety of lenders to assist you in finding the mortgage that is just right for you. Locking in a low rate now will save you thousands of dollars over the life of your loan. Don't procrastinate. Don't wait any longer. Call Lauren today at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim, MONSON.com.
Americans Veteran Stories with Kim Munson, Sunday afternoons at 3, here on KLZ 560 AM and KLZ 100.7.
And welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. What a special broadcast we have for you this December 29th. And we are wishing each and every one of you a very happy, prosperous, peaceful, joyful, healthy, wealthy 2022. This is our final segment with Dr. Alan Gelzo. He's written this amazing book, Robert E. Lee, A Life. I'm kind of on the edge of my seat with this. I didn't expect any of this about him. And you said he became a brigadier general in the Confederacy.
Virginia forces first.
Virginia forces first. And that was because, and it's incremental. That's what happens with life a lot, Dr. Gelzo.
Isn't it, though? Isn't it? I mean, hard as it is for us to appreciate this, you have to understand that in April of 1861, even after the secession of the southern states, even after the secession of Virginia, even after the firing on Fort Sumter, it was still by no means clear that this crisis would only result in a civil war. This is why I say Lee could simply have resigned and stayed neutral. I think one thing which prepares the path for him to make these incremental decisions that bring him to Richmond is that even when the invitation is extended to him to take command of Virginia forces, he still believes he has the chance to play the role of mediator between Virginia and the Union. Because the initial instructions he gives to Virginia forces in the first 6 weeks after he takes command in Virginia is always stand on the defensive, do not do anything to provoke a federal reaction. When one officer actually does take it on himself to cross his forces across the Potomac River onto the Maryland side of the river, and ironically, this officer is Thomas Jonathan Jackson, who will later become the famous Stonewall Jackson, Lee sends him an order telling him, get back across the river. Get out of Maryland. Don't do anything that is going to provoke conflict. What is operating in Lee's mind here? What is operating, I think, is this sense that he may be able to play the role of mediator between Virginia and the Union, and thus achieve by peacemaking a fame greater than his father had ever enjoyed in making war. And there were plenty of witnesses to this on Lee's part. Lee's cousin, Cassius Francis Lee, who lived in Alexandria, Virginia, had consulted closely with his cousin Robert in these weeks. And Cassius Francis Lee was convinced that Lee saw himself as being able to play the role of mediator, that when this crisis about secession finally began to lose its steam and to lose its heat, Robert E. Lee could step forward and say, all right, we're now going to arrange a reconstruction of the Union. This is where the word reconstruction first comes into play.
Okay.
And there were men, and Lee wasn't the only one, by the way. There were people such as, for instance, General Scott, John Letcher, the governor of Virginia, who predicted that this crisis was going to result in the fragmentation of the Union into maybe three or four or even five separate confederacies. And when it did, they'd stay apart for a while, then everybody would look at each other and realize, you know, we really can't continue on this way. Let's call a new constitutional convention and reconstruct the Union so that everyone's happy again. And Lee, I think, saw himself as playing that kind of role. But what he could not predict was the fact that Abraham Lincoln was not going to look on secession as some kind of temporary expedient while they looked forward to a future reconstruction of the Union. Lincoln had taken his oath to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution as it was, and he was going to treat secession, whether it was the secession of Virginia or the secession of any of the rest of the southern states, he was going to treat that as rebellion. And so he proceeded to do so. And in the end, that is what makes for a war and makes for the Civil War. But it also means that Robert E. Lee, who goes into Virginia, assuming that perhaps this is all going to get worked out and maybe he can have a hand in working it all out, that means that's not really going to be an option for him. It's not going to be an option for anybody. This is going to be a war, and he is going to have to fight in it. But now he is so enmeshed in the structures of the Confederacy that he's going to have to take his hand and throw in his hand fighting for the Confederacy, and so he does.
And he raises his hand, in essence, against the Constitution in doing
yes.
so.
The oath he took when he was commissioned, having graduated from West Point, the oath he took was an oath to the United States. When he starts talking about, well, my native state, I can't draw my sword against my native state, I mean, he's literally contradicting what he took as an oath when he was commissioned as an officer. What's curious about that is, as I said before, the funny thing is that Lee actually does not spend most of his life in Virginia. I think when he's talking about his native state, what he's really talking about is the vast network of family and relatives that he has in Virginia. Robert E. Lee had something like 80 first cousins. You know, it was quite a network of Carters, Fitzhughs, and Lees. And I've often said that if Robert E. Lee had thrown a brick down a street in Alexandria, he would have hit a relative. I think it's that family connection that he's really talking about when he says he can't raise his hand against his native state. And yet even that's not quite the whole story, because there were many of those Lees who stayed loyal to the Union. I think what happens with Lee is this incremental process. And he finds himself in the hands of the Confederacy, and he can't go back. Which means, curiously enough, that all during the Civil War, Lee is dicey about the Confederacy. Lee is very critical all through the war of the Confederate government. And at the end of the war, on the road to Appomattox, he says to William Nelson Pendleton, one of his staffers, who had been with him for all through the war. In fact, he says it to William Mahone, another famous Virginia officer. He says, "This is how I knew it would end from the beginning." This is a man who did not have tremendous confidence in the Confederacy. And he felt by 1865 that had been confirmed. So he goes to Appomattox, and he goes there to surrender his army, believing that, in fact, that was probably what the end of this whole adventure was going to be anyway. So you have yet one more twist of complexity to add to the story of Robert E. Lee that way. Robert E. Lee, the reluctant Confederate.
The reluctant. Interesting. But because of his personality and this striving for perfection, my understanding has always been that he was a very good general, a very good on the battlefield. So if he figures that this is going to be the outcome, as he shared, but yet he was a formidable foe for Lincoln.
Oh, he was indeed. I think you have to analyze Lee in three ways, this, if you want to understand him as a commander, as a great commander. You analyze someone like that as a strategist, in other words, the person who can take in the big picture, as a tactician, someone who's good maneuvering on specific battlefields, and as a logistician, someone who is good with logistics, with operations, supplying his army, moving it from place to place. As a strategist, Lee is 4 stars, because Lee understands that the only way the Confederacy is going to achieve its independence is if it strikes onto northern soil and scores an early knockout in this fight. He understands the Confederacy cannot go a 15-round bout. It just doesn't have the resources. The Union will prevail. So strategically, he understands you've got to take this war across the Potomac, and you've got to win it there. And you've got to win it by discouraging northern public opinion. So strategically, his grasp is really faultless. Tactically, it's another story. On the battlefield, he did not like to take tactical command. He liked to get the army that he was commanding to the battlefield and then really turn operations over to his principal lieutenants. And when he had as lieutenants people like Stonewall Jackson and James Longstreet, that worked perfectly. Now, he defeated Union army after Union army, the greatest victories being at Second Bull Run, at Fredericksburg, and at Chancellorsville. But Jackson is accidentally wounded at Chancellorsville and dies on May 10, 1863. James Longstreet is severely wounded in the Wilderness in the spring of 1864. And from that point on, Lee increasingly has to take tactical command of the Army of Northern Virginia, because he just doesn't have quality people to put into those positions. And it's not clearly a task that he enjoys. That's not the way that he sees himself operating. Probably the weakest part of Lee as a general is logistics. And that is because Lee was very reluctant to deal with the politicians. A successful logistician has to interface with the civilians who are acquiring the supplies, the civilians who are manufacturing the ammunition. And that is the part of his military responsibilities that he disliked the most, because he had seen some very prominent figures, senior officers in his early experience in the Army, get ruined by their contact with the politicians. I mean, he knew, I'm going to paraphrase Chuck Schumer here, he knew that the politicians had six ways to Sunday to destroy you if you cross them. So he was very shy of dealing with the politicians, and that meant he did not make the logistical demands of the Confederate civilian sector that were necessary to supply his army. And that is probably the weakest aspect of Lee as a commander.
Gosh, Dr. Gelzo, this is absolutely fascinating. You said it took 7 years to write this book, and we were talking about the publisher. How can people get the book, and who is the publisher?
The publisher is Alfred A. Knopf. The book is entitled Robert E. Lee, A Life. You can obtain copies very directly from Amazon or from local booksellers that you have around you. And I really hope you enjoy it, because it was quite a task to write. And one aspect that I enjoyed greatly in it was getting to meet members of the Lee family, descendants of Robert E. Lee and his family, who I found uniformly to be just marvelously helpful, especially in helping me track down a number of the photographs and the images that appear in the book. So this was a task of discovery, a voyage of discovery over many years, unpacking a man that, as, and I'll say this quite frankly, as a Yankee from Yankee land, I found to be a very difficult person to get my hands around and to understand. I hope I have understood him properly, and I'll leave it to readers of the book to puzzle their way through the book and come to their own conclusion as to whether this Gelzo person has in fact found the key to unlocking the mystery of Robert E. Lee.
Oh, Dr. Alan Gelzo, just fascinating. Again, that book is Robert E. Lee, A Life. Would highly recommend that you get the book. Dr. Alan Gelzo, I wish you a very happy new year, and we will talk again in 2022.
That will be something to look forward to, Kim.
Thank you so much. And our quote for the end of the show is from Robert E. Lee. He said this, "A land without memories is a people without liberty." So, my friends, today, be grateful, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. My friends, you are not alone. God bless you, and God bless America. And I-